Hi, everybody. Welcome to No Story Sacred. If you've never listened before, basically, we're four siblings who grew up talking about the art of storytelling. Now that we're adults, we're still talking about it, and we're inviting you to join the conversation. I'm Alex, and for the love of God, Brendan.
I'm Brendan, and yeah, for the love of God.
I'm Pippin, and no one provokes me with impunity.
And Kat is not joining us tonight. She's currently in the cellar with a guest.
She's got that real good wine she wanted to show off.
A fine Italian wine.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong at all.
No.
Nothing suspicious.
Nope. None of us saw her taking stones down there earlier. It's fine. She wasn't practicing her Freemason puns. It's fine.
Just her and a trowel and a guest.
Nothing weird about it.
Nothing weird at all. And if you haven't guessed already, listeners, today we're talking about the 1846 short story The Cask of Amontillado by Edgar Allan Poe. So spoilers abound. If you want specific content warnings and about things we may talk about, check out the show notes on nostoryissacred.com.
Content warning for character death?
Yeah, character death. Dread, I guess.
those who have a fear of being entombed alive.
Yeah, if you're claustrophobic, don't do it. Yeah.
And if you have a strange fear of Italian wines, just don't listen.
Yeah.
For those of you who've never read The Cask of Amontillado, according to Google, the story, set in an unnamed Italian city at carnival time in an unspecified year, is about a man taking fatal revenge on a friend who, he believes, has insulted him. And really,
that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And really, I feel that his retribution was totally justified.
What did Fortunato do?
Everything.
And nothing at the same time.
Oh. So, gentle listeners, FYI, our cast of characters.
Not very big.
No. There is Montresor, the narrator, who has been insulted in some way and will have his vengeance against Fortunato, who, has a good wine palate, I guess.
And an ironic name.
And an ironic name.
Salty is not really the feature of this story, or is it?
And there is also the Cask of Amontillado, which is a type of wine and also, spoiler alert, doesn't actually exist.
Amontillado does exist, but that specific cask, no.
Yeah. Amontillado is a wine that they both know about, but Montresor lied.
What? He lured him in false pretenses?
He did.
Worst thing that he did that night.
Yeah, clearly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. So, in this short story, which, literally takes a couple minutes to read, it is not long, we get Montresor, who's got his inner monologue going, about how he is not a man who will let an insult go by, and Fortunato, that asshole, insulted him. Doesn't say how.
Just that he did.
Yeah. And he is going to have his retribution. And the way he does this is he, tells Fortunato, hey, I've got a really good cask, a really good wine, down in my basement where no one is. But I'm not sure it actually is what the cellar says it was. And I know you've got a really good palate for it. But you know what? You're sick.
I'm just going to ask, what was the other guy's name?
Lachese? I don't know.
None of us speak Italian.
Yeah. I'm just going to ask Lachese, and he'll also end it.
And Fortunato's like, fuck you, no.
He can't tell him a Amontillado from a sherry.
Which I think might be a sick wine burn, but I'm not sure.
Actually, guys, Amontillado is a type of sherry.
Jesus.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, in actuality, Fortunato might not be that great a wine taster. He might just be alcoholic.
Counterpoint, the narrator here is recalling events that happened 50 years ago and is a murderous asshole.
True. True. I feel like maybe we can't trust him. Sorry. So Fortunato is all like, I can taste it. I'll be able to tell. And Montresor is all like, if you're sure.
Look, bro.
Look, I got this. Let me just pound down a beer.
Yeah. They go down. Montresor keeps plying Fortunato with yet more wine.
Oh, you got a cough? Oh, here. Drink some more.
Oh, you've got a cough? We can go back upstairs. I can still get the other guy.
Like, this tunnel is super moldy, and I mean, come on.
Bad for your health.
No, no, no. I don't want that asshole doing this. I gotta do it myself and drink.
This is also the Montresor family crypts. So they go back ways and no one ever goes down there, but it's fine.
By the way, what's your family crest again? Oh, you know, a boot crushing a viper.
And saying how I will always get revenge. He leads him down where no one will ever find him. There's a weird moment of Freemasonry where I think Fortunato is a Freemason and Montresor is not.
He makes a Freemason sign and Montresor can't recognize it because...
But he does take out a trowel.
I'm not that kind of Mason. I'm this kind of Mason. Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha.
And Fortunato's just like, you're weird.
You're weird. Can we just drink the wine now? Come on.
They get to a sort of weird sort of alcovey small space in a hallway, very deep into the crypts. At which point, Montresor, turning out to be a huge asshole. Like, no one saw this coming.
Shock. Horror.
Except everybody, because he kind of told us.
Oh yeah, he was not being subtle. Chains Fortunato to the wall. Fortunato sobers up fast.
Better late than never? Oh.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah, sobers up enough to realize that he is in a bad pickle.
In the business, we call it one dilly of a pickle.
It is a dilly of a indeed. Pickle.
Indeed. Oh, it's a dilly of a pickle because those pickles are made with dill.
Oh, and so then Montresor, apparently thinking that this is like equal retribution for whatever the fuck Fortunato did, starts walling up the entrance.
It's one of those things where no matter what Fortunato did, it probably doesn't equal the crime, right? It's like,
really
I cut you off in line at the bank. What?
What the fuck? And so Fortunato.
You talked in the theater.
Oh, well, okay, yeah, no, that's fair.
Montresor does recognize, you know, this is kind of fucked up, as he continues piling on the stones.
Yeah. He does have that moment of clarity, yo, and keeps going.
Should I go to therapy?
He says, putting the last stone in.
No, it's Fortunato who is wrong.
You know, Fortunato has that last moment of, oh yes, this is a joke. We're all in on this. And Montresor are like, yeah, okay.
Whatever you tell yourself, buddy. Bye.
And then there's the famous line towards the end, for the love of God, Montresor.
Yes, for the love of God. And then I think Fortunato has a heart attack.
It's hard to say. He stops responding. He's still alive because you can still hear the jingling of his hat, because he's dressed as a jester. And then Montresor shoves a torch through the last hole and seals it up. Puts like the corpses of his dead family members back in the front so it looks undisturbed, as indeed it had been for centuries. No one was going to come there. And he goes off on his merry way.
Probably like does like that little whistling thing, like...
Clicks his heel as he goes.
Ah, hello, servants. Did you all properly make sure to not be in the house at this time? Good.
Like, oh, no, sir. We were here, but you didn't give us explicit orders just not to leave. And you can't actually account for all of our whereabouts, but yeah, sure.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
So he totally murdered a guy, right?
Yeah. Don't say shit.
That's how you lose your job and possibly get murdered yourself.
So yeah, I think a big thing about this is all just it's that fact that the audience pretty much full well knows what is going on here. It's just Fortunato is the only one not in the loop.
Yeah, dramatic irony.
despair or gloom.
there is a sort of mounting sense of doom and despair. Yeah. I was actually reading La Casa Amontillado earlier. I ordered pizza for dinner. and I was waiting for it to arrive. And I was sitting on my couch reading it because it takes a few minutes to read. And the sun was going down, so it's getting darker in my apartment. But I hadn't gotten up to turn on the light yet because, I was sitting reading on my computer. It's backlit. And I'm getting towards the end of the story, and Fortunato goes, "For the love of God, Montresor." And then there's a knock on my door. And I... and it's dark, and I jumped so hard.
Right now, there's, some Edgar Allan Poe scholar who's, has that little danger sense go off in their heads, it happened.
But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Poe, he has a shtick to him, and you know what? Stick to it.
Good at what he did.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's been a long enough time that I don't remember all the ways that he's racist. Because early American authors were racist. But yeah, I have a question for you, Brennan.
Shoot.
I know for a fact that Alex had to read this in high school because I had to read this in high school. Did you have to read this in high school?
I don't remember having to have read this in high school, honestly. It's possible that my freshman English teacher was still trying to figure out the syllabus at the time. Maybe I'm misremembering, but I don't think at the time I took the class that we covered the Cask of Amontillado.
He also switched things around because I remember sitting in our freshman year classroom and having him explain the horror part of the torch.
Oh, yeah.
So what is?
Because he puts the torch still lit into the now tomb of Fortunato, and then closes it up. And because fire feeds on air, as it grows dimmer, that means that he's losing oxygen, and he can see that. So it's psychological torture on top of, murder.
And just being buried alive. Buried alive.
Like, whatever Fortunato did, if it was anything, is...
Big if.
Yeah. And that's one of the great things about this story is because we've got this told entirely from the point of view of the narrator, who is, I'm going to take a stand and say, unreliable.
Well, actually, he's fairly reliable. He just doesn't tell us.
Well, here's a secret. All narrators are unreliable by definition.
Yeah.
All of them are.
Unless, a viewpoint is, a perfect robot or something, but even then they may have memories that are altered.
Even for a person omniscient is an unreliable narrator.
We hid this information from you. Ha. Huh.
What you gonna do about it?
Nothing.
But you have the two options of either Fortunato did something horrific or Montresor is the horrific individual himself.
So, no matter what, when it comes to interpreting it, someone is horrible.
Well, I'm pretty certain Montresor is horrible. You kind of don't really go back from...
entombing a guy?
It's true. There's the implication that his family had been vast, and is now not.
A fraction of its former glory.
Yeah. Mm.
And let's return to that subtlety of Fortunato, or his family, was very fortunate... And Montresor believes that he shouldn't be. And the insult is that.
Yeah, maybe the insult that he got is that Fortunato has all the money he feels that he should have.
Or Fortunato does do the Freemason sign, and he probably went, "Haha, you're not in the Masons because your family's poor now." Oh, in a, but not in...
Subtle way.
Yeah.
Though... He did seem surprised that...
The Montresor didn't recognize the sign?
Yeah, he seemed surprised that Montresor didn't recognize the sign.
You mean he saw the sign, yet it didn't open up his eyes?
Oh, that's going to be stuck in my head.
Yep.
But I also don't think it's a mistake that we spend a lot of the story in Montresor's family crypts. The history and the death of his family.
Mm-hmm.
And...
I mean, for all we know, the Fortunato family ages ago was the key factor in the decline and eventual loss of standing of the Montresor family.
It's the Campbells and the McDonald's.
All over again.
Son of a bitch. One of my coworkers turns out to be a Campbell somewhere in her history.
Well,
guys, Hollywood actor Bruce Campbell.
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
But is he one of those Campbells?
I believe so.
You've seen his chin. That's a.
You've seen his chin. Who hasn't? Come on.
No, apparently my coworker went to Scotland at one point and her grandfather or something, or maybe her dad went, don't tell anyone that you're a Campbell. Don't mention it. They get mad. And then she apologized to me for that time her family killed mine. And now I'm like, you know what? I forgive you.
Except do you really?
I mean, Pip, don't you have a wine cellar? Aren't you showing that coworker?
I don't even have a wine rack.
The wine rack of Amontillado.
The wine that's currently in a cardboard box on the floor of Amontillado.
Why are you putting up drywall in front of this kitchen nook in front of me? What? I don't think this is effective as you think it is.
No, don't worry. I have fettered you. Yeah, I'm just gonna pull my arms out of the. I'm out now.
And look, I'm now Kool-Aid manning through the wall.
And I managed to actually find some wine in here, so I've got some in my hand.
When? Oh, man.
Ah, man. So, the Cask of Amontillado. Not much else to talk about, really. It's just a lot of mood and doom.
I mean, if I were any good at psychoanalytic theory, which I'm not, I'm sure I'd have so much to say. I could bring in like Jungian theory and things being reminiscent of the womb, but I'm bad at psychoanalytic theory.
When you're walking through like catacombs and all that, that's pretty clear underworld stuff, right? And the costuming of those two guys for whatever reason.
Mm. Oh yeah, I mean it's probably actually significant that Fortunato was dressed as I want to find the exact word. Wearing a motley outfit with bells on his hat. He was pretty much dressed as a stereotypical jester sort of thing.
Yep. Whereas Montresor, I believe, for whatever event this was like dressed in all black. And again, Fortunato, you need to be a little bit more keen in your insight here. Come on.
Listen, he botched the role.
He was also roaring drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And all this goes down during a carnival, so no one questions the whole being drunk thing. Yeah, the 1,000 injuries of Fortunato I had borne. And I was like, what the fuck did he do?
Could have been something extreme, but not murder extreme. At least that murder.
I think Fortunato does mention in some way that this is probably a bit much, but I'm still doing this.
Yeah.
Am I crazy? Probably?
No one's around to call me on it. Except for Fortunato. And he doesn't get a say anymore.
Oh, poor Fortunato.
We could talk about the art of the short story.
What is the art of the short story?
Pretty much having one thing to say and saying it really, really well.
Yeah, apparently I can't do short stories. I always have things to say.
I mean, yeah. The thing is, like, don't get me wrong. Short stories are awfully hard to write in their own right, too. Yeah, they're short, but that just means you got to be a lot more efficient with your prose.
Yep, a lot more efficient and a lot more, like, concise in what you want to say.
Yeah, you can't have, like, a moment when you're down. You can't have, like, that extra scene that doesn't really do anything, but gosh darn it, you like it. Or that maybe it moves kind of slow, but it's saying something important. Everything has to work towards your end goal.
Shit, we are on a schedule here. We only have another 1,000 words.
Yeah.
Actually, not even that.
Depending on what market you're working for.
True. But yeah, the short stories are hard.
Yeah.
Like, I struggle to think of, like, other really good short stories, not necessarily of Poe and all that. And it's like, yeah, it's difficult for me to think of off the top of my head. Like, maybe Ellison?
I mean, I don't read a ton of short stories.
Me neither.
So we are clearly the people who should be talking about this.
There's Occurrence.
True.
And something by Twain, probably.
I mean, let's not discount modern short stories. N.K. Jemisin just released her collection, which I need to read, which I was in a bookstore. I held it up because it just came out and I wanted to look at it. How Long Till Black Future Month? And I was in the bookstore with Ashley. She turns the corner, sees me holding it, comes up and just snatches it out of my hand because she wants it. And I was all like, I was going to show you.
Sure you were.
I was. Because Tor.com publishes a lot of good short stories, novellas.
Read anthologies, people.
Yeah. Escape Castle, Pseudopod.
I read some of George R. R. Martin's short stories set in the Westeros world there, but I don't know if that really counts because even those are still kind of lengthy.
Yeah.
Just to sum up here, there's lots of good short stories out there. Don't necessarily think that they are light subject matter or anything like that just because of their length.
Asimov's, that's what I was thinking.
Ah.
And of course, Science Fiction and Fantasy Magazine.
Oh yeah, some of the stuff Mom and Dad have submitted for that.
Yeah, got published in because they're good at what they do. Clark's World, Strange Horizons, Apex, Uncanny. And actually, one short story that I always sort of, that every once in a while just comes back to me and I think of a lot, having nothing to do with the Cask of Amontillado, but we can all just deal with it, is a Hugo winner from a few years ago, The Water That Falls on You from Nowhere by John Chu.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a story about I think it's an interracial gay couple, and one of them is bringing his boyfriend, I think possibly his fiance, home for the first time. His parents do not know that he's gay, and The Water That Falls on You from Nowhere falls on you when you lie. He has to come out to his family because he literally cannot lie about this because the water will give him away. And it's entirely possible that I'm just butchering the story and its meaning and its beauty, but there we go. I'm sorry, John. But yeah, I do think about it every once in a while. It's a great story.
That's nice.
So are we ready to start talking story changes or ideas?
Do you want to go first?
Sure, because it does kind of tie into what we're just talking about with these short stories here.
Mm. Yep.
As I was reading this, it occurred to me that short stories are good for a particular storytelling medium, and that is film, believe it or not. Because that same quality of short stories where they have to be efficient in their storytelling, that holds true in trying to adapt it to film. So here's the thing, like, there's this trend of, like, adapting novels into film. And the problem with that is that if you only have 2 hours to tell your story, a whole lot of the content of a novel just has to be cut, right? So short stories, again, by their brevity and efficiency, are much, much, much easier to adapt to film. So what I'm thinking here with The Cask of Amontillado is a movie that plays out kind of similarly to the film. Are you guys familiar with Run Lola Run? Where you have like the same story kind of being told multiple times with subtle changes or things like that?
I know of it.
Yeah.
I haven't
watched it.
Can't say I've seen it, no.
Well, like, the conceit in that movie is that you basically tell the same story or events as they unfold, but, like, change something earlier on, and then it causes changes throughout the rest. And they just use this as an opportunity to tell kind of a short story of a series of events in a unique way. So what I'm thinking here with The Cask of Amontillado in film format is playing with the unreliable narration aspect as we delve into maybe 3 or even 4 tellings of the events that lead up to this grisly murder. So, like, maybe the first telling is from the Montresor side. This guy is being a psychotic, murderous dick. Holy crap. And he buries him alive. Next telling is actually establishing, like, from Fortunato's side, like, his family didn't actually do anything. You know, it was some small slight or something as we're presented as the audience. And then maybe a third thing is, like, the meeting of the two in between, where it's like, yeah, Fortunato's family did do dickish stuff, but does that justify horrible, horrible murder?
So, a Rashomon, then.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably a better example. Yeah. Can you summarize Rashomon?
Rashomon is a Kurosawa film, wherein, I believe, if it's at court, where four witnesses are giving what they saw.
Testimony?
Yeah, telling what they saw of a crime. And none of them have their story straight. None of them do. And it's really good, and I should actually watch it at some point.
Huh. Maybe stay tuned.
Sure.
But yeah. I just think when I see a short story, especially one as short as this, I think it could be a pretty easy transition into a film of some sort. Like, not even that long, not even that high budget. And then you get to see this horrible entombment murder, like, three times.
Mm.
The thing I want to try and layer in here is every single retelling adds on extra meaning to the conversations that the two characters have as they're walking through the tombs, and, like, cameras focus on one character or the other depending on the narrative that we're currently sitting in.
Mm.
Maybe, like, the first telling is, like, the neutral telling, which is, like, this is pretty ambiguous. So maybe actually the second telling is exactly showing what Fortunato's family did against Montresor, and, like, oh, maybe he was justified, even though he's a little extreme. But then the final telling is, like, nope. Still horrible.
I mean, according to Wikipedia, the bastion of reliability, Casco Amontillado has been filmed a few times, mostly anthology film tales of terror sort of things.
Yeah.
Vincent Price has been involved because, of course, it's Vincent Price.
Vincent Price, Ace and Edgar Allan Poe go together really well.
Yeah.
Like chocolate and horrifying peanut butter.
Like chocolate and wine.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun,
dun. But no, most recently it looked like there's a 2014 American-British-Italian mystery film called... It clearly gets translated into terror, but I think it's French, and therefore I cannot pronounce it. T-E-R-R-O-I-R.
Fair. Yeah, just terror. Let's go with terror. Terrier. There we go. I just butchered it for you, so that way you're covered.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, clearly you are right. This is a thing that can easily, very easily be fit into film. Because, you have that one goal, and you don't have to drop a ton of stuff to try to get it to fit into a 90, 120 minute screen time.
I mean, hell, you could probably just do it in the modern day and not have to worry about having it be period appropriate or anything like that.
That's
just
what the French film is.
Boom, there we go. Yeah. Hey.
Nice.
But yeah, the thing is, I would not hedge into doing a straight retelling of it. I think playing with the multiple viewpoints and the theme of the unreliableness of this narrator, I think, is the important part.
Yeah, the unreliable narrator is what makes this story probably.
Make it happen. So that's just my go here. You guys go.
All right. I'll go. And I'm going to go with a very serious interpretation. CSI, Italy. With Detective J.J. Bittenbinder.
No! No. Street smarts.
Is this guy leading you down the weird family cellar?
You street want smarts. This precious cask of wine?
Go get it!
Oh.
This guy took him to a second location.
Yep, Fortunato should have dropped him to his back, started kicking his legs, thrown him off his rhythm.
Thrown him off his rhythm. But no, this is after the fact.
He still got blood on his shoe.
Well, no, there wasn't any blood. No blood involved. He's got still got a what's the mason cement? It's not
plaster.
Yeah, he's still got plaster on his cuff. A few days later, Fortunato is still missing after the evening of the carnival, and the detectives are on the case. What was his last known whereabouts? We went to carnival. Well, he was dressed as a jester. No one could miss him, and so they start tracing his steps and tracing his steps, and then eventually they like someone. Saw him on the street with Montrezor. So they go to meet with Montrezor, well, they're still, piecing together a timeline. And okay, where have you seen him? And like, oh no, I didn't see him.
Right.
Okay. Where were you on the night? Oh, I was out on business all evening. My servants can attest to that. Uh-huh.
But none of your servants saw you that night. You could have come back. You are now an official suspect.
And then going to, talking to the servants, like, oh yeah, he told us he was going to be gone all night. And, since he was gone, I'm pretty sure all of us went out for the carnival. Yeah. And then, I think such and such a witness stayed home. Because either they were sick or they were really Catholic. No, not really Catholic. Because actually, I think they're Puritans. Don't tell anyone. Did Illy have Puritans?
Who knows? They do now.
You didn't see the Montrezor that night. No, I kept mostly to my room. I see. Though there was a terrible racket at some point during the night. Oh ho.
Really?
The case is afoot. Ta-dun!
And then eventually culminates to them going down into the catacombs.
This mortar is fresh.
I'm just going to interject here.
Yeah.
At this point, the one detective is fiddling with something in his coat and he says, a Freemason's been killed. Looks like this is a case of stone cold murder. Wow. Sunglasses on.
We're in the crypts. Why are you putting your sunglasses on?
Yeah.
Sunglasses aren't invented yet, I don't think.
I just had them custom made.
Yeah.
We're just keeping that yeah soft for the microphones and your listening pleasure.
Yeah.
Now, and so, a fun time with murder.
A happy, fun romp with murder. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Ain't nothing wrong at all.
I mean, Al, sidebar, one of our favorite games is, Persona 4, which is one of the happiest games about murder you could play.
Who wants to talk about murder?
Murder!
Yay! That's a specific meme.
So, anything else to talk about here with CSI Verona? I mean, of course, you can do the follow-up story where they track the case of the two dead teenagers.
Well, free, technically. I mean, Romeo did kind of kill Paris.
Tybalt?
Oh, Tybalt was already done on deal at that point. First time in Romeo kills Paris outside the...
The tomb? Yeah. Oh. So many dead teenagers in Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo did kill Tybalt.
Yes. And also Mercutio is dead as well. Don't forget that.
Everybody loves Mercutio.
Ask for me tomorrow and you shall find me a grave man. And other dun, dun, death dun, dun, puns.
Dun. Aw, man. Hurry. Mercutio could have joined the CSI crew. Ah.
But no, that's my bit. The wine's in the cellar. You want it, you get it.
So, Pip, do you have anything to add to Alex's CSI story?
No, I was just double-checking. Yeah, Romeo also kills Paris. And I forgot, drags his body into the tomb to lie next to Juliet. So Juliet, I guess, fucking wakes up and sees two dead dudes.
Oh, no. Oh no, Romeo and, that guy, Romeo!
Shove. Thud.
Oh man.
Oh man, so Prince is really fucking pissed.
What did I just say? Come on!
And also, Paris was played by Paul Rudd in Romeo plus Juliet. I'm learning so much tonight.
Yeah.
Speaking of learning stuff tonight, Pippin. It's your turn.
Oh, we want to go down that path?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Nice to see you in there, Bren.
Thank you.
Oh, man. So as ever, I had an idea earlier, and then I didn't write it down.
Nice.
Shame.
Because of, yeah, this is who I am as a person. So, you know, I'm trying to think of ways that, you know, you can still sort of get the impending doom going. Actually, no, I know what I'm going to do. I've decided that men are awful, right?
Pippi.
Yes.
Are you going to do the thing?
All I'm saying is that Montresor is avenging all of womankind because 1,000 insults of Fortunato is him being a dick to women all the time. He does that thing where he claims a woman's idea as his own and everyone like praises him for it. You know, he calls women he doesn't know sweetheart and tells them to smile. You know, and everyone like knows about Fortunato. You don't try not to be alone in a room with Fortunato. Everybody knows, but no one like does anything about it. And you know what? Montresor fucking done with it.
So Fortunato is a Weinstein.
Yeah. Yeah. God, that's just a happy little image right there, isn't it?
So all of a sudden, the context of the final conclusion changes completely, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. We spent this whole time not knowing if Fortunato actually deserved it, and if maybe Montresor's just being the asshole here. And maybe in mine, Montresor still is, because murder's wrong. But we all know. We all know that Fortunato deserved it.
In this sense, it's the kind of vague wish fulfillment of the reader.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't do this in real life. Don't do this in real life. Again, to emphasize, don't do that in real life.
But if you could.
Here's how it goes down.
But yeah, oh my gosh, just that catharsis.
Fortunato thinking he's gonna get lucky down there in the crypts.
Yeah, I've got some great wine downstairs where no one will hear us.
Handcuffs? Kinky. Yeah.
And then murder.
Okay, I mean, fun wish fulfillment times, yay.
With
murder!
Yay! Kermit Flail.
So would you like just even like elaborate more on the just how much of a dick Fortunato is in this case?
I'm not even sure you would need to, because if we just establish Montresor as a woman of society, suddenly that first line of the 1,000 injuries of Fortunato I had borne as best I could, suddenly we all know what those 1,000 injuries could be.
Mm.
Like that one added bit of context. I don't know if it's the same with you guys, having vastly different experiences than I do. But, you know, suddenly that blank could be filled in.
Indeed.
With murder.
Yeah, murder.
There we go. That's something for a mug.
Yay, murder.
Okay. I have to imagine Fortunato's dialogue changes a little bit.
I mean,
in subtle, not even subtle ways, just
possibly
drunk bro type.
Oh god, it wouldn't even. Oh man, just the way he would insist that how he could taste the wine, and maybe with a little bit of undercurrent of, oh, of course you got fleeced, you silly woman. Ugh.
Now let me explain to you about how wine works.
Oh god, that would be the entire conversation on the way down.
He doesn't even know wine.
Yes, that's very interesting. Here, can you put your hand up against right there? Perfect. Clack.
And then the whole Freemason conversation becomes different because women can't be Freemasons. They have their own separate thing.
Oh, look at this hidden sign I'm doing. Ha ha.
And then she takes out her trowel and going, yeah, is this it? You silly girl. Oh, man.
I can almost imagine taking the trowel and kind of doing the tapping on the shoulder. It's like, ha, ha, ha.
Ugh. I say again, ugh.
Man.
Wow. Way to lead us on a downer, Pip.
Listen.
You painted us a picture.
It's just who I am as a person.
Qu- quickly, somebody else make a murder pun so we can bring it back to CSI Verona.
Looks like he's a good vintage. No.
Looks like the blood is off of the vine.
No, these are good. We're failing.
Wow. I also just want to do a quick shout out to the Casco Amontillado memes.
Yeah, you guys were talking about that when we were trying to decide this episode. It's like, oh, there's a lot of memes going on about this. Can you speak on that real quick before we go into game land?
The one text post on some social media. So like, what's that? You've never read the Casco Amontillado? Well, I happen to have a copy in my basement.
And so on.
God, there was a great one on library Twitter. And it's from the UND, the University of North Dakota Chester Fritz Library.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a picture of, like, a hole in one of their walls. You know, a little square hole, some pipes behind it, and, you know, clearly open space. And the text says, wanted, someone to climb into this hole in the library for us. Job requirements. Limber. Trusting. Has not read The Casco Amontillado by Edgar Allan Poe. And basically just the general idea of, oh, you want this thing? Come into the crypts of my palatial estate. Just to every possible question. It was popular for a while and I appreciated it.
You want it, you get it.
Okay, so are we ready for a gamey game?
That's game, gamey game.
I'm not sure what's happening. I'm not sure I approve.
Game.
Well, I have a suggestion for one this time.
Ooh, yeah.
How about we do Everything Changed When the Baristas Attacked?
My favorite!
The alternate universe game.
Oh, yeah.
So do you have one already, Pippin? Or shall we try and just vamp a little bit more first?
Well, I'm torn.
You're torn? Oh, okay.
Hi, Torn. I'm not.
Fucking wow. Cannot believe you just did that to me. Now I'm not even going to regret taking two at one time. Because you know what? Kat's not here, so I'll take hers too.
Wow. Okay, go.
I am torn, and therefore doing both, of a library AU, because I mentioned library Twitter, and a coffee shop AU, because I fucking love coffee shops.
Well, you know a lot of libraries have.
Coffee shops. My library has a coffee shop.
Is it a good coffee shop?
It's an okay coffee shop. We serve Starbucks coffee, local pastries. That's fine. So, maybe they're rival coffee shops.
In the same library?
Shut up. And it's going to be the same sort of thing for both, just where is it set?
Well, it's in Boston, because there are so many colleges in Boston.
There are. But no, with the coffee shop one of the coffee shops is failing. It's run by Montresor. And the other one, run by Fortunato, is super successful. So one time, Fortunato comes over to Montresor's, and maybe he's actually, like, trying to offer help or something, and Montresor just takes it as an insult because Montresor is an asshole. And he's all like, oh, hey, I've got this really cool, great new coffee beans. They're in the basement. Let's go look.
Oh, sweet.
And one thing leads to another, and suddenly there's murder.
One thing leads to another.
Yes, listen, I'm telling you, psychoanalytic theory all comes back to the womb. And so he gets murdered, put into the basement of this coffee shop. And in the library one, that doesn't really work because no library has funding, so how can one succeed over another? And we're all in this together, goddammit. You know, fuck capitalism. But maybe it's just where the murder takes place.
I mean, really, Pip, who goes to the stacks?
I go to the stacks. Maybe it's a closed stack situation and that's why no one goes down there. It's there one of those automated libraries where you just go on a computer and say what you want and a computer goes and gets it. There's a special book in the archives. Come take a look. Oh, man.
Huh.
And maybe a plucky librarian finds a crime scene and solves a murder. Because librarians are amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I've got.
Huzzah.
Murder, coffee, and plucky librarians.
All right, Al, do you have one?
Yeah, sure. I've got one. Let's set this in space. Space.
Space. Space. Space.
Space.
Space. Space.
I want you to know that I turned my face away and then did the dramatic head turn, even though this is, in fact, audio only.
I appreciate the extra effort.
But yeah.
So what happens in space?
Let's say, do you want her to set this on a ship or a planet?
Come down to my palatial planet.
It could be both. It could be both.
Yeah.
Palatial planet.
The cave system here runs for miles.
Sweet. Let's go exploring. That sounds fun.
Yeah. Woo!
I want to show you this alien species I found. Can you have sex with it?
Of course you can, bro. High five.
Ugh.
Kind of tapping into what Pip did earlier. Oh.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, this is a guy who's going to die. Come on, Pip.
True. Yay, murder.
Yay.
My official stance.
Okay.
But yeah, and you know, some also space themes such as, ooh, isolation.
Oh.
Well, that's one of the really good SF themes in space, you know, when you set things in space. Just that emptiness. Ooh, different take. Let's go on a spacewalk. Yeah.
Oof, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, then you're drifting in space until your oxygen runs out, and you have a little readout.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And then the ship that you were on jumps to hyperspace.
Yeah, and let's just face it, I should probably write my body in the void story, huh?
Yes. Yeah, this seems kind of like a lead into that,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Dang it, I can't get away.
You can never escape.
Even when I get out, they just wrote me back in. Right, that's me.
So that's me then. I'm going to stick to brand here. And I think I would make this a either a session or a one-shot D&D adventure.
Just keep losing those insight checks.
Yep. There's a lot of insight checks, and your host, the host of this house or whatever, is leading the party through. And it's like, yes, help me with this thing in the basement.
God.
But you'll get, there's a really sweet magic item down there in the basement.
Here's the thing. I know our D&D party, we wouldn't even do insight checks. We'd just follow.
Yeah.
We'd be like, cool, whatever. We trust you.
We went to Evil Undead Temple. I think we, yeah.
It's true. We've made poorer decisions. I made a,
true.
I became a BFF with a lech. He was a really nice guy.
Misunderstood.
He was.
Though we were smart enough to not give him his memory back. So I think we deserve some credit there.
Minimal.
But think of all Minimal. He could have told us with his memory back.
He could have led you to the Amontillado.
Oh man, he had some Amontillado wine. Oh, we should have restored his memory.
Yep. Now you'll never know. Untold power and really good wine. Yeah.
The Wizards of Wine have nothing on him.
Are DMs allowed to have, like, a confederate among the players?
Sure.
Like, go to one of them and go, hey, here's the deal. Here's what I need you to do.
Well, that's why the Whisper Room exists.
That's true. Do you pass your insight check? Here you go.
Ooh.
But no, I have a feeling like as a, you know, trying to create little adventures for people digging into short stories, again, a good source for crafting this stuff. Cause yeah, I could totally see leading a bunch of, greedy players into a situation that is surely their doom.
Yeah. Man, you just need to like charm person one of them to convince the others.
Yep. Yeah, it sounds like a good idea, you guys.
You know,
it's fantastic.
There probably is a D&D story like that somewhere.
Oh, undoubtedly. They did Alice in Wonderland, for crying out loud.
What we're saying is that someone should write us a Casco Montiato one-shot for us to play.
And then we could broadcast it. Yeah!
And if someone doesn't submit it to the podcast, cats can't say no.
While cats away, we plug other shit.
What?
Okay. So do we have anything else about the Cask of Amontillado?
I was curious and I wanted to roll an insight check and I got a 9.
Oh, Pip. You think that that wine is going to be awfully tasty.
Fuck yeah, it is. I happen to have a D20 with me.
Anyway,
that's not the point. The point is, I'm getting some... Why don't I have any wine? That's the question.
That seems like one of your own personal existential questions.
Past me made mistakes, man.
Yeah, what the hell, past us's? Where's our wine?
Yeah.
Actually, I have wine in the kitchen. I shouldn't say that.
God damn it.
I've got like a Chardonnay that I used in cooking today.
Oh, what'd you have?
It was just this kind of crock pot dish where I used about a cup of wine in the mix. It was like chicken and artichokes and mushrooms.
14. Oh, yummy.
What's that?
14.
Still hard to read, man.
Right, so we're dead.
Yeah.
But hey, maybe we'll get some wine out of the deal.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, man, it would be a druid, no less, so they'd know how to do mold earth.
Oh, God, they just...
As a cantrip.
They just stone shape us in.
Oh, my God.
I know. It has to be slowly done, you guys. You know, that's part of it. You know, piece by piece, tier by tier.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Doing that while you guys are lobbing fireballs is a different story, though.
Unless those shackles are one of those anti-magic variety.
Ooh. Anyway,
don't give him ideas.
Actually, give ideas. Submit something, and we might. Here's the bargain: if somebody actually does write up a one shot adventure, we'll actually play it if that actually happens. Maybe like a bonus episode or something like that. We'll see.
We'll see how it goes.
So yeah, that was The Cask of Amontillado by Edgar Allan Poe. And as always, if you have a story to submit, head on over to nostoryissacred.com/submission. Follow us on Twitter at nostoryissacred, or you can send an email through contact@nostoryissacred.com. Your hosts have been Alex McDonald, Brendan McDonald, and Pippin McDonald tonight. Editing for this episode was done by Brendan. Transcript done by Ashley DaCosta. Art by Jay Wolf. Show notes and transcript are available at nostoryissacred.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and please rate, review, and subscribe to No Story is Sacred. You can also visit our Patreon page to support the show and get neat rewards at patreon.com/nostoryissacred. See you next time when we talk about the 2010 movie Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Until then, we're No Story is Sacred, and any story can be changed. This was Brendan.
This is Pippin.
And this was Alex.
And we're No Story is Sacred.